Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to
Hey, guys, did you know you can play harmonica with your nose?
Episode 35.
It's got a real clown thing to it.
Here we are at episode 35.
God damn it. Well, and maestro of the nostrils is our good friend Seth. How's it going, Seth?
I'm okay today.
You're good? Good. It's good to hear.
I learned something new, that you can play harmonica with your nostril.
Yeah. Terrific. And so did all our listeners. That's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wait. Yeah. What happens if you sneeze into the harmonica?
Ooh, nothing good. You have to throw it out and buy a new harmonica.
I don't know. Well, we'll try that out in the future. But. Mm-hmm.
Well, also here with us, of course, is our dear friend Zach. What's up, Zach?
Oh, not much. How's it going?
Well, pretty good. I learned a lot about harmonicas just now, but, you know.
Yeah. Me too. Weird.
Yeah.
Quite.
So, of course, just another reminder, check out fakingmovies.com for links to our show. Also, check out our WordPress, fakingmovies.wordpress.com for additional content.
Yeah.
Can you guys we can cut that where I forgot the name of our website, right?
Oh, definitely not.
Yeah.
No.
And
potentially by the time this airs, we will figure out how to include links from one to the other.
Oh God. In an internet world we live in, and yet here we are.
That's a tall order.
Now, Zach, I'm aware that like computer science isn't one single thing, but you are a computer scientist, right? And you still haven't been able to figure out, or
I've been peddling that bullshit title around for a while. But yeah. The proof is in the pudding here, boys.
A literal doctor of computer science.
That's what they tell me, yeah.
Right. Please don't dox, everyone.
We'll work on it. We'll definitely work on it. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's, I guess we should jump in here with this week. Zach is going to be faking for us. Zach, why don't you tell everybody what movie you're doing this week?
Yeah,
for sure. So this is a movie I have never heard any single thing about, but
really,
these boys are all jazzed up about it. Yeah. So I'm excited to see. Called Network. Mm-hmm. And this is starring Faye Dunaway, mm-hmm. Robert Duvall, mm-hmm. Peter Finch, and Ned Beatty. What mm-hmm. a dog, that Ned Beatty.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. true fact.
Yeah. So a pretty good cast. Definitely not bad. All right, should I do the thing?
Yeah,
go for it. Tell us about your movie that's not gonna be as good as the real movie.
Yeah, sorry.
And you're probably right, but it's gonna be a real, real roller coaster. Oh, I'm excited.
I'm ready.
Terrific.
Yeah.
I call this Seth's Network.
Wonderful.
A real Faking Movies classic in the works here.
Yeah.
All right, so fade in.
Fade in. Robert Duvall and Ned Beatty are up-and-coming business folks, a la Wall Street Volume 1, starring Charlie Sheen.
So wait, Charlie Sheen or Martin Sheen?
Ooh, I thought it was Charlie. Could be Martin.
It's Charlie.
I don't remember. It's okay, Charlie? Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Oh yeah, because it was Michael Douglas as the old guy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I can't believe I mixed up Michael Douglas and Martin Sheen. They are not.
I don't know. I mean, like, there's zero stakes in not mixing them up. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's true. That's a good point. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
Yeah.
We already interrupted you 30 seconds in. And by 30 seconds, I mean 5 seconds.
5 seconds is the new 30 seconds.
So they're like up and coming finance major folks, day traders, whatever it may be. But they're kind of inept. They're like bros about it.
Sound like finance so people to me.
Yeah, all the ones I knew for the most part. Yeah. So we actually fade in a deli where they're having lunch and talking about strategies for moving up in the world, because that's game, right?
So this movie starts in a deli, or were there two different fade-ins?
No. This is the real fade-in. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to move up in the world, you say?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Moving on it's... up to
the side. Oh, dear.
Moving on up.
So, they got a piece of the pie.
Getting the singing out early. It's good. It's good.
Oh, okay. Early.
Yeah. Wink. Yeah. We've shown restraint in the past. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, it's fair.
Okay. Anyway, we're in a deli, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. So it's made clear pretty quickly that they're not the hardworking type, but rather the cheat their way to the top type.
Excellent.
Yeah. So they throw around some less promising options for climbing the ladder, like, for instance, stealing people's clients or faking earnings numbers. But ultimately, they decide the real answer is, of course, to network. Yeah, well, give it a shot. Give it a shot.
When they say network, do they look straight at the camera?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
at each other and then they turn and you get
and
like
then
a
they
shot.
Both turn 90 degrees.
You get a shot of them across the table and they just say, "We need to 90 degrees network."
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. And then they held the shot too long, so you could hear the director yelling "cut" in the background.
Or they're just staring into the camera and breathing heavy, like, are we done? Is it over?
Yeah.
So they finish up their meals.
I don't know why, but for some reason I'm just assuming this movie turns into Old School.
That's an interesting choice. I mean, we'll see. We'll definitely see.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe if we keep interrupting you won't see shit, but you know.
It's entirely possible. they finish up their meals, they bid adieu to their friendly deli attendant and head back to work. Upon returning to work, they walk into the office into the middle of a company-wide bullpen-type meeting led by Faye Dunaway, the surprisingly rare empowered 80s female CEO.
Okay.
She's giving a sort of Wolf of Wall Street type pep talk about how everyone has to step up their game because earnings are down and heads are gonna roll at the end of the quarter if things
don't coffee's pick up. For closers, we get it.
Yeah. It's very, very cliche at this point.
So
the meeting adjourns and Faye retires to her office. The boys shoot each other nods and proceed immediately into her office for some routine ass kissing. Upon entering, she asks annoyedly what they want. They spout some bullshit about how much of a bummer it is that revenue's down, and they are quick to place blame on other employees in a very thinly veiled manner. So she waves this off as she knows that they're idiots, as it's been established, but mentions that they should focus on, quote, what really matters, and join the company hockey team because they keep getting annihilated by the rival company and it's becoming embarrassing.
Oh, I didn't expect this turn.
I didn't expect it, but I love it.
Stick with me. So they laugh and then realize that she inexplicably takes this rivalry very seriously. So they retire to their desks, but very quickly decide that this is the path of least resistance to climbing that elusive corporate ladder.
Zach, can we
Can we have like a tiny little Canadian flag on her desk somewhere as like a little hint to the audience as to maybe why she cares so much?
Sure, certainly, certainly. Yep, yep.
And yep, maybe like a jar of maple syrup too.
Well, we're getting close to on the nose, but yeah, it's the 80s, I presume. So yeah,
it's just a pile of loonies and
and toonies.
Her office is
and toonies. Yep. Yeah, uh huh.
Her, yeah. We can make her office just a hockey locker room if that's
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves because we also want to jam some lacrosse sticks in there too.
Yeah. Oh, sure, sure. Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know, yeah, and hockey might be a religion in Canada, but lacrosse is the national sport.
That's what true. I hear. That is invented true. Somewhere up in those bits by the Native Americans. Yep.
Just one more thing. There's probably a framed picture of Wayne Gretzky on her desk.
The great one. No, she's a real Bobby Orr fan.
Oh,
okay. I didn't expect that. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't expect that either.
Yeah.
But for some reason, she loves the Toronto you know what Maple Leafs.
Oh, Zach, you know what would be great? Instead of having the opening shot, we're back to the opening shot, by the way. Instead of
sure,
that being.
God damn.
instead of that being in a deli, could it be in a Tim Hortons?
Oh.
Well, let's say no.
You get
and
some
you might
of those
find
near
out
the
why.
Border, but
yeah,
you know.
The deli will be important. Let's say
okay, yeah, yeah. We're just fucking with your vision now. Maybe yeah. we should not interrupt for 30 seconds.
Hey, dealer's choice, bliss.
I'm gonna throw a spoiler out here for you, Zach. I think me and Seth are me and Oops, Seth are both worried that we're not going to have enough to say about the real movie because we liked it. So we're just
okay.
That is true.
So we're vamping. Is that the...
a little bit? Well, ruining all that stuff.
Yeah, let's just say that's fucking fine. With you. But
yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. That works.
Tomato, tomato.
They are spelled the same.
By this point, you may have noticed that Peter Finch has not been mentioned.
Sure.
And that's because I don't have any fucking idea who Peter Finch is. So we're gonna
Peter Finch. Peter Finch, star of Network. You have no idea who Peter Finch is.
I sure don't. I even looked up a picture of him and didn't
and
fucking
it just
help.
Didn't
at
register.
All. Not okay. a thing. Nope. Blind. Yep.
Interesting.
So we're going to replace him, and you might be guessing, with who? Don't worry about that just yet.
We're going to replace him?
We're going to replace him, yep. Wait, we're going off the ranch on this one.
Is this a first ever audible for faking movies?
Yeah. People have added, but I decided I'm just, we're just going to wedge New Jack in for sure, yeah.
Okay.
Wow. All right.
So, we have a new character, Greg, and he is the friendly deli clerk that they see every day. And they happen to know that he's played a bit of hockey in the past.
Zach, is his full name Greg Goldberg?
Well, I mean, let's find out.
Is this the deli from Mighty Ducks?
So I was kind of hoping nobody would know Greg Goldberg, star Junior Goodwill Games hockey goalie's backstory, but it sounds likely you might know Greg Goldberg, star of Junior
Goodwill
Games.
You mean Greg Goldberg, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania native, moved to Minneapolis, St. Paul with his family, and they opened up a deli, and he became the goalie for the District 5 Mighty Ducks? Yeah, I think I fucking know who he is.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. Oof. All right, so stick with me.
yeah, spoilers. Yeah. God damn.
So...
I wanted to reveal
Well, I mean, it's here. at lunch the next day, they ask him about his hockey past, and Greg gives him the old, oh, that was a long time ago. I don't really play anymore. But they're unconvinced. So they strike a win-win deal with him where they hire Greg as a, quote, catering consultant for a modest fee, and then he'll join the team.
Okay. Can there be a scene where they're like, I don't think he's telling the truth when he says he doesn't play anymore, and they just start whipping things at him, and he uses his goalie reflexes to catch him?
Yeah, no, that sounds perfect. Oh, that is very
flinging,
flinging
knishes at him.
I was just assuming in true Philly style, we'd be whipping batteries at him.
Yeah, either batteries or the old Delphi beef and cheese, right? You
know? Beef and cheese Delphia.
Yeah, beef and cheese Delphia. Yes.
So yeah, they go back and tell Faye about this plan, and she dismisses it as a waste of time, but they hire him anyway, and he joins the team. So they put him in goal, and suddenly they win their first game for the last couple weeks. So things pick up. They lead the team to victory via a series of quick montages where they rise in the standings through a series of close wins.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Finally, we make it to the last game of the season against the aforementioned rival company. But things are not looking great. At the end of the third period, they're down 2-4 and things aren't looking good. It's at this point that Greg calls a timeout and calls the team together on the bench. He gives a rousing speech about triumph in the face of adversity, and at the end, he rips off his corporate team jersey to reveal a magnificent green and purple Mighty Ducks jersey.
God damn it,
turns out Lee kind of blew this one, but it's Greg Goldberg, famed Junior Goodwill Games goalkeeping champion.
show up with a box full of jerseys? Do they change jerseys just like a D2?
He does not. I briefly considered making Faye Dunaway a very old Julie the Cat Gaffney, but it didn't really work out.
Oh, shit. From Bangor, Maine?
Yeah. From Bangor, Maine, famously, yes.
Oh, boy.
So he ends his speech exclaiming, "Boys, it's time to do some net work."
Oh, God. Damn it. I love it.
Wait.
Yeah, we again pan directly into the camera. Yeah, everyone looks down the barrel. Yeah, for the second title situation. Yeah. To finish up, they score two goals, tying it up. Gilbert makes an amazing save, clearing it up the ice and assisting in the game-winning goal. Faye is overjoyed that they beat their rivals and impressed with the boys' crafty plan. She assures them that they'll do just fine at the company, at least through the next hockey season. We roll credits on everyone sharing victory beers at the deli.
That's nice.
So this has been Network, Sean Weiss, a la Greg Goldberg's Phoenix-like rise from the ashes back into massive stardom and into America's hearts.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
I would like to point out really quick that your movie, Faye Dunaway is like an older person, and Robert Duvall and Ned Beatty are apparently 18-year-old fresh-faced bullshitters. Like,
yeah.
I was wondering about that.
Two men who I'm pretty sure have never had hair.
Yeah.
Was that what you were saying with old school? Was that where you were going with that? Like, they're going to be the intern Bob De Niro kind of situation?
Yeah, kind of, a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I just faked all the ages, as is commonplace. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
sure. I mean, our movies are generally unstuck in time, so that's fine.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. It was a sports movie. You know, I have oddly a place in my heart for sports movies, even though it is inexplicable.
Okay. That is true.
Doesn't seem like your jam. Yeah.
So I'll say I
really struggled on this one because you guys really hyped up the OG Network again. I don't know any like a single thing about, so I was very tough.
Just from the IMDb rating of the original Network, which was 1976, it's 8.1.
Oof, aloof. Okay, all right. That's
so,
not great. Bad start.
With 117,000 votes. So, it's a highly regarded film.
It is a favorite film of many. It's a favorite film of many filmmakers, especially.
Yeah, even though it has some major problems, but it also is pretty decent.
So
Zach, do you want the IMDb summary?
Boy, do I.
Which is, it's reasonably accurate. So, the summary is, a television network cynically exploits a deranged former anchor's ravings and revelations about the news media for its own profit.
Whoa, that feels oddly pertinent in a 2018 world.
You know, so that's yeah,
huh. Yes,
yeah. We'll talk about
yeah.
that.
Okay,
mm-hmm. We'll talk about that extensively. I feel.
Oh man, so in my quest to make this plot, I kept thinking like, what does network mean? I tried to go away from computer science. Like TV network somehow never crossed my mind. Of course, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. This movie won 4 Oscars, I think.
Whoa, and it was shit. Nominated okay. for several others. I actually, once we get through our plot summary, I have some Oscar conspiracy theories that I want to pitch about this.
Yeah. Movie. Ooh, it was, I think it was nominated for 10.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, that sounds right. Were these theories written on the side of a road inside of a car by any chance?
God, I hope
no,
so.
I've actually had these for quite Damn. A long time. Yeah, I
oh,
know.
Okay. Bummer. Well,
all right. Yeah. So, Lee, do you wanna kind of let's work through the summary of this this film?
Yeah, I'll see how brief, because it has a fairly linear plot. There's just a lot of side plots that twist it up.
Yeah, which a couple of them I have major problems with, but in general, I enjoyed the movie. So, weirdly.
Yeah, I mean it's. Most of the problems that I have with it don't crop up until towards the end. So for the most part, it's a very good movie.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, Network. It starts off with a narrator. And that actually, I wanted to talk to you about that, Seth. How did you like the narration? It kind of, I get the idea they were trying to get across with it, but
it made it seem like a fairy tale.
Well, I think it's supposed to. This movie's supposed to be like a morality tale.
Yeah, it is. It
is. To a certain extent, anyway.
I don't know. Like, narrators to me are frustrating because I like stories to start where they actually start, despite the kind of bullshit that I pull on this podcast where I make all sorts of ridiculous plots with narrators. Like, in terms of actual movies that I enjoy, I usually like to avoid it.
It's a do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah. I'm above the law. Not I am yeah. the law.
I will have 10 fucking sequels.
Like, so I think I had Coolio as a narrator in some stupid movie that I did.
It was a stupid movie. You're not wrong.
Get over it. You did have Coolio narrating. Get over it.
Yep. Uh-huh. Ah, they got over that hill or whatever in Pittsburgh.
I'm still not over it, to be fair.
Oh, what a horrible plot. Anyway. Go ahead.
Oh, not yours. I mean the real one.
Oh, yeah. Well, either way. Yeah.
You're such a fucking liar. Anyway. but... So the narrator in this movie, I don't think it's very intrusive, but at the same time, it's like
it only shows up maybe thrice.
I think three times is about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Weird.
Yeah. Way to say three times like a normal person. Why? Well, I say thrice like an asshole.
I mean, I guess I just don't like that band, so I don't know.
Oh, I really like that band.
Yeah, there you go.
Justin Kinesaru,
I was hoping Zach would get that joke.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Nope, that one went way beyond. All right. So,
anyway. All
right. So, movie starts off with Peter Finch, who is the main character.
Who won an Academy Award for this.
Posthumously. Huh. He died not long after the filming.
Yeah, he only had one other film credit, I believe, before he died.
Yeah, he did one other role. Mm-hmm.
Let's call that a sad loophole and say my Greg Goldberg situation was totally cool then. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Because you want to build sequels and he wouldn't have been around for it, so.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Peter Finch is Australian and he plays an American person and he only got cast after he sent the director a tape of him reading the New York Times in his American accent.
Oh, fun. Okay.
Yeah. And it's pretty good. His accent's pretty good. It doesn't really fall out at all during the movie.
I didn't really notice any major like issues. So.
And he does a lot of like shouting, and that tends to be when those things kind of fall apart.
I mean, he had like a pseudo transatlantic thing because that was still very popular in 76. It wasn't intrusive like it is in, say, like Breakfast at Tiffany's or anything Rex Harrison ever did ever. I honestly didn't know he was Australian until I looked it up later. So it's good. It's good. I think you did a good job.
Yeah.
Let's get off these facts back to goofs.
Yeah, back to the first scene of the movie. Peter Finch is a news anchor who has just been told he's being fired, basically because he's got low ratings, and they want to bring someone else in. So he goes out drinking with his best friend. William Holden plays this guy, and he's the like producer that he's worked with through their whole career. Mm-hmm. And the next day on the air, he's supposed to announce that, you know, in a week I'll be retiring. So he does that, but he also says, and I'm going to blow my brains out on TV when I do it.
Neat.
Yeah. And then to kind of get the point across that this news show is so irrelevant, even the booth of like directors and stuff don't even notice that he says it. They're just completely glossed over.
It's like a stagehand that's like, did you guys just hear what he said? And they're like, what? What? News? What? And they're like, he just said he was going to blow his brains out. And they're like, what? What are you talking about? What are you joking about?
This is very fun, especially for the 70s. This seems sort of way ahead of its time in terms of...
It's very interesting in that regard, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We'll get more to that, I'm sure, later once we finish, but...
Okay. So there's a lot of there's a lot of fallout, obviously, over this with the network, and like the news producer is probably going to get fired over it, too. So they decide, you know, fuck everybody, we're going to do our own thing, and he asks... Peter Finch asks, can I go back on the air and, like, just apologize and like, leave on my own terms? And they're like, yeah, you can do it. So he goes on the air the next night to apologize, and he goes, I don't know what I was thinking. I guess I'm just run out of bullshit. So now he just keeps saying bullshit over and over again. I'm just like,
life is bullshit.
Right.
The news is bullshit. And
so,
like, he just repeats the phrase bullshit for like 5 solid minutes.
is everybody so freaking like, out? They're all like,
stop. take him off the air, but his buddy, the producer, is like, no, I'm gonna get fired anyway. He can say what he wants to say.
His
buddy, the producer, had just been like stabbed in the back by the network owners, and that's why he's kind of like, well, what the fuck? Nothing matters anymore. I'm out. He's out. Let's just go.
Out with a bang.
Yeah.
So, like, skip ahead a little bit to the next day. Robert Duvall is the company. Like, he basically is the corporation that bought this network. He's the guy who's going to... He's like the Jack Donaghy. They send him down to, like, run it, more or less.
Yeah, he's the hatchet man.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he happens to meet with what's your name?
Faye Dunaway?
Seth. Faye Dunaway. Jesus, I'm sorry, guys. he meets with Faye Dunaway, who she's like the newish head of programming, and she's trying to like save this network, which is floundering. And she tells him, like, so Peter Finch's character is Howard Beale. Howard Beale's ratings were the highest they ever were last night. Let me put him back on TV. So they keep parading him out on TV, and he starts to, like, you can tell he's had kind of a break because he starts to just ramble and rant and rave. And at first it's like a novelty and people start tuning in, but then people kind of lose interest.
I was gonna say, well, it's like sad, right? Because he's kind of a human train wreck. So it's like, that's a, like, you want to watch, but
right.
Yeah.
And they kind of lose interest until one night he has this like vision. Mm-hmm. And the scene, the way they show it is, it's like the camera, it's just, it's all dark and just his face is being lit. And the camera is just above his face. And he's just having one half of a conversation with some kind of, like,
higher power. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa. This is nightly news like no one has ever even possibly conceived of it.
One of the three word summaries I was playing with was like, ooh, Alex Jones, but sincere.
Yeah.
Sure. Minus the male supplements plus sincerity. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So it kind of launches the show into this new territory of like, he becomes the mad prophet of the airwaves, they call him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And there's a really famous catchphrase that comes out of this. It's, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody, okay, like, he, in one of his broadcasts, he, like, convinces people to just go out of their windows and start screaming this. And that's what really rises him to popularity, is the fact that, like, people were actually going out of their windows and yelling this into the streets.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
So, Seth, what do you want to pick up? Talk about maybe, like, the network keeps getting more and more sensational after this?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So, like, we do some time jumps, and the network, like, the network news now is the Howard Beale Show, where it has,
it's called the News Hour, and it's with Howard Beale.
So, are we past the initial week? They let him stay on because of sensation?
Because he started getting popular, and he started, like, upping their ratings.
Okay.
And he has, and he ends up with, like, a 30-40 share of the network.
Ooh,
like,
that's big. Yeah,
or not of the network, but like of the viewership
of the night.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they start like having like psychics and tarot readers and like a weird segment called Skeletons in the Closet and things like this, all on the Howard Beale Show.
Okay.
And they all have these, like, variety show style sets built around them.
Yeah.
All right.
Like, cool. Rotating platforms where you know, it's like, it's very 70s and it's very variety show.
It looks like the set to Match Game, honestly.
Yeah.
I was thinking the Pyramid or the Match Game. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And that is now the nightly news that is most popular, and it's mostly just crazy people talking about about nothing.
So it's cable access, is what you're describing. Yeah,
kind of. Yeah. Go ahead, Seth. No, you go.
Well, I was going to talk about. Oh no, you.
Let's
hang
call
up.
The whole thing off.
I was going to talk about the how Faye Dunaway has another idea called like the Mao Zedong Variety Hour or whatever.
Oof,
that was exactly what I was going to talk about next. So go for it.
Yeah, where she like she's in charge of programming for this kind of shitty network, and like its ratings are slipping in. Like, somebody shows her a video of some domestic terrorism group, like, kind of Black Panther-esque.
A very fringe, left-wing, like, Communist Party, violent terrorist Communist Party offshoot type
group. I was going to say, we're in the middle of the Cold War at this point in the 70s,
yep.
Right? Like, and she doesn't get fired for trying to promote the Mao Zedong whatever talk hour. that seems insane.
No, because like the whole thing is about sensationalism. Like it's about consuming
it's postmodern.
This television, and she sees what this terrorist group records themselves holding up a bank, and.
Oh, okay.
She sees this as like, we need to option them. We need them to have their own show. And she approaches them and starts like, they start to produce their own crazy
show.
TV
crime
yeah,
show.
There are this leads to more than one scene of radical communist militants negotiating television rights contracts with network yeah. suits. Like,
yeah, why not?
We'll get to the commoditization of everything in a second, because that is a really interesting theme in this to me.
Yeah.
But back to the main plot, like, Faye Dunaway is bringing back this, like, she's in charge of programming now, and Robert Duvall has put her in charge of it, and the character interactions are really not, I feel, that important at this point. It's more the mm-hmm. concept. Do you agree, Lee?
Yeah, absolutely. It fancies itself so much of a satire that it forgot to make relatable characters, I think.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Which is one of the major detractors of it.
All
right. But we
I mean,
end
it was
up
purposeful
we have...
too. They like explicitly edited out any scenes where Faye Dunaway showed like emotion. Like they were like, no, you're gonna be angry or no emotion, and we're gonna edit everything else out.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
It is purposeful, even though I have some objections to it, which we'll talk about in a second. But Howard Beale is getting more and more popular until he learns that his company was bought by another corporation, and then that corporation is being bought by the Saudis.
What?
And
he goes off on semi but completely racist tangent about it.
Yeah.
Is this at all? Hold on.
Yeah.
In the 70s, were the Saudis buying TV? Were the Saudis buying anything?
Yeah, well, this is in the middle of OPEC. Like, OPEC's, like, highest power.
Right.
We're coming up, we're in the middle of the Ford administration, and we're coming up on
Carter. We're
coming
up on the gas crisis and all that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oof.
All right.
But goddamn, this movie is self-referential, which I'm going to talk about in a second. But it's. But Howard Beale goes off on this like rant about how the Saudis are, for lack of a better phrase, taking money away from America and taking American jobs. And
I'm so glad that's the phrase, and it was not many of the. Several ones that were in my head.
Yeah. So the thing is, he has so much influence that he convinces people to like petition the White House to like stop this deal from happening. And it works.
And they get like 6 million letters in a single night.
Oh, okay. Right.
Letters and telegrams and things like that, because it's 76 and that's how things work.
Yeah.
Western Union, baby.
And the network execs don't like this because they owed a significant amount of money to the Saudis already, and this was going to like dig them out of the hole. So Howard Beale gets called in to corporate, where
and this is where Ned Beatty shows up.
Yeah.
Oh, quite late.
he's been in and out this whole time, but Ned Beatty is like the owner of the company that is being sold to the Saudis, and then he like darkens the light, and it's a beautifully composed shot where he like brings Howard Beale into this giant table with all of these like legal lamps, you know, those green legal lamps.
Oh yep.
Just lining the table. And then he does this holier than thou pontification about how the world actually works,
and the lighting kind of obscures everything except for his face and his hands.
Yeah. Ooh,
all
right. And like it's a really, I think, beautifully composed shot. And it's quite powerful because he's like, there are no more nations. The only thing that matters is the almighty dollar. And he has this really quite evocative speech.
Yep. That seems especially pertinent in that you said 76?
Yeah, 76, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that seems about right for that time in history, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the thing about this speech that I found even the most interesting was his logical conclusion of there are no more nations. He actually says, like, it's going to be one collective grouped together by money fighting for the best interests of everyone. So it's almost like this idea of a communist utopia that can only be reached through unfettered capitalism, which was really weird, but like
like it's incredibly baffling because of the clear ideological
conflict.
I
mean, that's two opposing ideologies, like
but ultimately, like, kind of unifying. But,
Sure.
So, Howard Beale has a similar experience that he had earlier when he became the Mad Prophet. And so he then goes on and starts pontificating this idea that individuals don't matter and that, like, and it's like, it's quite, to the audience, quite depressing. They're like, oh, there's no such thing as individualism. Nation states don't matter. Everybody, like, is subservient to more or less capitalism. And his ratings start dropping. So, Robert Duvall, who's still in charge of the network, and Faye Dunaway decide to assassinate him.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
they want to take him off the air, but Ned Beatty's character won't let them because he doesn't care if this TV show makes money or not. He wants this message to keep going out. And he they don't know that's why, but
All right.
So it leads to this really like dry boardroom scene of them planning an assassination.
I really like this scene. I thought it was like, oh, they're just so cold about it. They're like, oh, well, I mean, we could kill him at this time, but, you know, that wouldn't be economically viable for, you know, the East Coast market. So therefore, we should.
If we kill him on this date, then it's a great lead in to this new TV show that we have.
And... Yeah. And it's all so, so cold and calculated. And I thought it was really well done as a satire. Yeah. And so they eventually settle that, yes, they are actually going to kill him, and they hire that terrorist group that we talked about before.
Oh, sure. Yep.
To kill him live on air.
Oh, so we're back to that. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
And that's the end of the movie, more or less.
He goes to open his mouth, and he gets shot twice, or a bunch of times, and... Yeah. Then the narrator kicks in and says, and that's the story of Howard Beale, the only man to have ever been murdered for low ratings. Or
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ouch. That's a pretty good place to end, though. That seems fitting, I would say.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I was reasonably engaged for most of the movie, so that was...
Yeah. Well, and then he goes out as, like, a martyr, which is nice.
He goes out as a martyr, but, like, we know that he is like, emotionally and mentally unstable the entire time. So it's a little... The whole point of the satire is that they were exploiting this insane person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fair.
For ratings.
Yeah, that's rough. That's very rough.
So, like, it's depressing as hell movie.
Yeah.
There's even... there's a debate at one point about what is the ethical dilemma of putting a mentally disturbed person on TV to deliver the news, and they decide, well, if we just call it editorializing, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's so much more pertinent to today's world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
We left out the tedious romantic subplot, as Seth is displeased with. And this time I really back him up because it's awful.
It's really dumb.
So Faye Dunaway and...
William Holden. So that was our main character, the news anchor's best friend, who was an executive.
I was gonna guess Peter Finch and Faye Dunaway, but and then she's like very sad that he's
They mention up front that Peter Finch is a widower. Like the whole reason why Peter Finch has started to get more and more morose is that he's a childless widower, and then his ratings start slipping even more,
and then they and that's fire what him.
Leads to his breakdown. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a rough go of it, for sure. Yeah.
Then we have William Holden as Max Schumacher, Max has been married to the same woman for 25 years, has two daughters, one who I believe they say is starting at Northwestern, if I remember correctly, the other lives in California, is pregnant.
To have a baby, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
And Faye Dunaway and he start this weird relationship that's not, it's specifically not professional at the beginning. She's like, oh, hey, let's make this a professional thing. And he's like, no, we'll just have a personal thing.
What do you mean by professional?
He was an executive and she was in charge of programming.
Oh, so that's a networking thing.
Yeah.
Literally, no pun intended.
Yes.
And he's like, no, I want to fuck.
Yeah.
Though, okay. I feel like she has more power in the I want to fuck sort of thing. Do you agree, Lee?
Yeah, because they really repeat very often that he feels like he loves her and she doesn't return any of those emotions.
And they say she has a... quote, masculine demeanor after sex, and
it was the same.
Oh no, all these dudes want to cuddle and stuff, and I just want to get out of there. And you're like, okay, fine.
Nah, seems about right.
But his marriage, of course, gets broken up by this. His wife throws him out.
Again, sort of, because there's like a long, tedious scene where she's like, oh, I'm not going to give you up without a fight. Like, I want you to leave, but I'm not going to give you up without a fight. And he still leaves. Mm-hmm. And so then...
Beatrice Strait is the actress who plays that character.
Uh-huh.
And she won Best Supporting Actress for this. And... she has the record for Oscar winner to have the least amount of screen time. She's only on screen for 5 minutes.
Oh, fun. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, she's really not around that much. But is quite emotionally charged because, of course, her husband is cheating on her.
Yeah.
But eventually this whole relationship breaks down with Faye Dunaway, with William Holden and Faye Dunaway.
Okay.
So Faye Dunaway is apparently, well, according to everybody, more career oriented. And the quote that that William Holden has is you are television in because she's so distant. The quote is you are television incarnate, Deanna, who's her character. Indifferent to suffering, insensitive to joy, all of life is reduced to common rubble and of banality.
Wow. For somebody making a motion picture, they really had an axe to grind about, mainstream media or something. I don't even know. Yeah.
Yeah. That's tough. and this whole thing is so incredibly goddamn sexist.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Well, it's mid-70s, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's frustrating to watch.
A male character that does all this stuff probably wouldn't get that told to them during the movie.
Oh, yeah. No, certainly not. Yeah.
Yeah. And William Holden is like, oh, I feel guilty for leaving my wife.
Well, yeah.
And all of these sorts of things.
Like,
and I'm like,
sounds
hey,
like you're kind
asshole,
of a dick.
Maybe you shouldn't have cheated on your wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then
yeah.
This, like, maybe you wouldn't feel guilty if you hadn't left your wife for this unfulfilling relationship. But.
Yep.
Well.
Potato, potato.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so, well, so, yeah, go ahead, Lee.
Do you think we can move on to notes now? Like, just our thoughts and stuff, or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a whole lot other than, like, the self-referential things. Like, there's a bunch of references to Squeaky Frome at the beginning, which...
What?
And, yeah. Well,
oh, and there's some Patty Hearst. Like, there's a literal character that's just supposed to be Patty Hearst, except we didn't want to say it was Patty Hearst.
Yeah.
Oh, fun. Okay.
Somebody on the news references, like, oh, man, there's a lot of kidnapped heiresses this season.
Wow, that's dark as fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Okay. And references to, like, Oliver Wendell Holmes and F. Murrow Abraham and... Like, it's super goddamn referential.
I mean, they're doing the news. I guess that makes sense, but oof, yeah.
I just like Anna Karenina. But the few other things that I wanted to talk about was the quote, like, why Howard Beale does all of this stuff is he's constantly told by whatever higher power figure, you can say these sort of things, and you should. Quote, because you're on television, dummy.
Mm-hmm.
Wait.
What
does that mean? I'm confused. Like, you, like, the people need to hear this, and you should be saying this, but I can't condone it as your boss? Is that...
No, it's more like, oh. you can say whatever the hell you want, and people will listen to you.
Oh,
because
okay.
You're on television, dummy.
Oh, so we're again... critiquing like the power of mm-hmm. television or media.
Yeah, which is a thing that Howard Beale is railing against quite a bit.
Yeah,
sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, very apropos these days. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's yeah. Okay.
So Lee, what sort of stuff do you have?
So I just wanted to point out this is a fairly famous piece of trivia about this movie. The lighting changes significantly throughout the movie. It starts off very dim, and the intent was to make it look like a documentary. And by the end, it's intensely lit, like, to look very glossy and overproduced. And it kind of goes on a sliding scale all the way toward the end of the movie.
So, now you reference, like, now that you mention it, yeah, I definitely remember that. But I don't remember noticing that when I was watching.
I think it tries to get you to, like, it happens in such subtle increments that it tries to make you comfortable until the end when they coldly discuss murdering a man on TV and then murder him on TV and then the movie just ends.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, oh shit, oh, that's what TV does to you, I guess.
So what are we supposed to glean from this? Like, what's the mood change that they're...
I think it's like you didn't notice this happening.
Oh. So you look back and
then,
you go, oh, that was weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's you, yeah. You didn't notice this happening on screen, so you're definitely not noticing that it's happening in real life kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of meta. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
What else? Let's see. So Paddy Chayefsky wrote this movie. Mm-hmm. This was his third Oscar for best screenplay.
Yeah.
Whoa, fuck. Do you have the other two?
Hospital and Marty. I don't know anything about Hospital, but Marty is what's his name? Ernest Borgnine plays like a fat butcher who finds love. That's basically that's that movie.
That sounds fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, that movie also won a bunch of Oscars. So
sure. Yeah.
And then. The other thing I wanted to talk about with this movie is this is my Oscars conspiracy theory.
Okay. So, yes. Oh, yeah. I've been waiting.
This, I mean, it's not crazy or funny. This is just something that I think
Well, this let is, us be the judge.
Yeah, come on.
Okay. All right. So this comes out, the network, and the other big movie that came out that year was Rocky. So
Rocky shit. Wins. Okay.
Yeah. Rocky wins Best Picture and Best Director in a year when Network was heavily favored for both of those awards.
Wait, really? I did not know Rocky won any Oscars, let alone the big ones. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's a bummer. All right, go on.
So what movies come out the following year? Star Wars and Annie Hall.
Oh, so, yep.
Annie Hall wins Best Director and Best Picture. And my theory is because the year before, the Academy voted for a cultural phenomenon movie as opposed to probably what is the best movie that came out that year.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to give the Oscars to another cultural phenomenon, even though, like, I know that Annie Hall is like, oh, this seminal romantic comedy, but fuck Annie Hall. It's not Star Wars. Star Wars was the best picture that year.
Yeah, it is neither Star Wars nor is it all that good, to be honest.
Yeah.
I hate Annie Hall, but this is another story.
I'm very
not a super fan.
If you look at the direction in those movies, like, the directing in Star Wars is far more interesting than the directing in Annie Hall.
I'm glad you used the word interesting.
Yeah. So, like, if you're giving that award out on, like, a merit of, like, who did something, who did
something
better
like
work,
innovative did... or interesting or...
Yeah.
Creative, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So anyway, my theory is that because Rocky beat Network, they gave the awards to Annie Hall instead of Star Wars.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Annie Hall was Woody Allen's like first famous-ish movie too, right?
No.
Yeah.
It was
maybe not
it
first
was
in
a
general,
huge...
but like first big time.
It was a huge hit, like more of a hit than a lot of his other movies. But he was like. Woody Allen was a big deal.
Yeah, already.
Well, I find myself now, we've been sort of collectively talking about the Oscars a lot recently because it's coming up, and it's funny that we prescribe all of this actual merit to winning an Oscar when we continuously nowadays agree, like we all agree that like the movies that win aren't necessarily the best movies.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but no, like, it's a big thing.
My theory holds like, even more water, then.
Yeah, no, it very much does. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, that all makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Because, man, I hate Avatar. God, this is a garbage movie. Fuck.
Yeah. And I fucking love Star Wars so much.
Well, Avatar didn't win, Seth, so.
It didn't win? Okay.
Did
well,
it not?
No.
It got a lot of acclaim.
Yeah,
it did. Yeah.
Well, he spent a lot of fucking money on it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a total garbage movie, and I'll say that on the record. I don't know why people like
so,
it. But
so we should probably get to our ratings now.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Seth, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and go first. So Zach, your movie.
Wait, before you go, IMDb was 8.1, you said?
Yeah, 8.1.
Very high.
It's quite high. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I, like, it's surprising, but I do love sports movies. And
yes,
this is a sports
that
movie.
Is surprising. That is genuinely surprising.
I know.
Yes.
Like, everything that you guys know about me and everything I've said on this podcast, like... It should be surprising, but there are a couple of sports movies I really, really love.
Yeah, you're a big fan of Cube 2 Hypercube. What's up, Kyle?
Shout out to friend of the show,
no
Kyle.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, famous sports movie, Cube Tube Hypercube, yeah. Starring Mark Wahlberg and the Eagles.
It's a spinoff of Gleaming the Cube, which is a sports movie. So.
I was going to say like a Rubik's Cube kind of John, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, Chariots of Fire. So...
Oh, Christ. All right.
The guy who wrote the score... The guy who wrote the score to that movie goes by a single name, and it's Vangelis.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
That's upsetting.
What a great motto. Yeah.
We used to have to watch... I remember whenever the science teacher was sick in high school, we had to watch Chariots of Fire for some reason. So we had watched
Chariots of Choice. Yeah.
I don't know. It was Chariots of Fire and the Buttercream Gang. Because
wait.
Yeah.
What?
The science
teacher.
What
the fuck is the Buttercream Gang?
It's like a lame. God, I don't even remember, because I was never paying attention.
I think you mean when your science teacher was sick, and by that you mean like nursing a hangover, smoking weed back in the lab prep area?
No. He
was like, I don't know, man, watch this cool movie.
No, yeah. Our science
teacher blowing those tasty rips into the vent hood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were made for that. Exactly.
I wish, but no. My science teacher in, this was middle school, was very, very conservative.
Those are always the dirtiest of birds.
That's true.
He just wanted us to watch wholesome, well, Christian friendly movies.
Movies about Brits running.
Yep, because that one was completely innocuous, and then the Buttercream Gang, I'm reasonably sure, is somehow Christianity affiliated, but I'm not entirely sure because I never paid attention.
Yeah,
but I remember going over.
Get indoctrinated.
Yeah, well, I remember that my Catholic friend Stevens' parents had a VHS copy, and so I just kind of assumed. But maybe I'm completely wrong.
Sure.
I grew up Catholic, and we didn't have anything special. Like we, like...
y'all watch normal ass movies.
I could completely be attributing things that are not correct, but
I think that might be what's happening. Yes,
I seem to remember ignoring it because I seem to feel that it had like these morals that it was trying to impart into me, and I was not feeling that.
That's the Seth I know and love.
Yep. Ignoring morals since 19XX.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say this whole section might end up on the cutting room floor.
Oh no.
No, that's good.
I'm just looking at the timestamps. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Ed, that is a nightmare. We'll figure that out. Don't worry about it.
But I love sports movies, and there weren't quite enough nightmare twists for me.
I will say the only downturn was like, oh, no, we're winning the or we're losing the final game. Like, there could have been some more hardship for sure. Yeah.
I mean, that's not so much a twist as just a thing that happens in sports movies.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, everybody remembers Rookie of the Year. They're just.
Yeah. Everybody but friend of the show, Jeremy. Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Inexplicably.
Yeah, throw that ephus.
So, you know what, Zach? I'm gonna give you like a 6.7. Like, it's good. Ooh. It's
okay.
Good.
No, I made a very stupid movie. That is generous for the dumbness that I created. Yes.
Yeah, like because I enjoy sports movies, and if. You know, it has certain actors like Keanu Reeves in it, then maybe
and
I'm
Sean
wrong.
Weiss, yeah, Greg Goldberg, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
As for the real network, like, it's a
solid movie. Like, it has some major issues, particularly the Faye Dunaway tedious romantic subplot.
Sure.
Tedious
sure.
romantic sexist subplot. Because it really makes she
did overcome it to win the Oscar, so at least she got that out of it.
Yeah, I mean, though we just spent a while discussing how the Oscars are worthless.
That's true.
That's true. That's
true. Yeah, so, but it is a very interesting movie with a lot of, I think, pop culture clout. Because as Lee said earlier, like, it's like filmmakers just circle jerk to it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a 7.2.
Okay.
It's good and it's worth watching, but it's not mind blowing, but it is an important watch.
It sounds unlike any movie that I've ever heard of before.
Yeah,
that's always fun.
It is a good satire, especially for the time period that it took place, and it is topical to today. So,
certainly.
That is that. Lee, what do you think?
Yes. So, for the real movie, I really like it. There are definitely faults. There's definitely things about it watching it again that I liked less. And I wasn't a huge
that often happens.
I'm not.
The rewatch is always like shit.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it. Of how much it kind of rips apart anyone who dares to have ideals. It is incredibly cynical in that way that a lot of 70s movies are.
That's true.
Yeah, and like Seth said, like, there are a lot of issues with like sexism and stuff like that. But
sure. Goes without saying.
It's a very well done movie, and it's a very entertaining movie, and it's like, it is legitimately thought provoking. I'll give it that, even if I think a lot of the messages that you can take out of it are like things that are incredibly bro-y somehow.
Yeah, I agree.
That makes sense.
I agree.
Yeah. Sure. But so, like, for the real movie, I don't know if I would give it an 8.1, but like I would definitely give it like a 7.8, let's say.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Zach loved it. It was stupid as fuck. But you did something amazing. First time ever on Faking Movies. Not only did you leave it open to create a franchise, you tied it into a pre-existing franchise.
Well, that was a good job.
You somehow made The Empire Strikes Back of the Mighty Ducks. So,
well, I mean, like, temporally, I made a somehow, like, inexplicably canon prequel to Mother Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I was thinking this was later when they were adults, but all right, we'll go with that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was setting it in the 80s, which is before all of the movies. But yeah, like, I don't know. Yeah. Simultaneously, the two main dudes who are now 170 were, let's say, 22. And then Gray Goldberg, Sean Weiss, was like 30. So, none of it makes sense. Right.
Anyway, I don't think I can give it as good of a score as the real movie, but that's fun. It was fun as hell. I'm going to give you a nearly coveted 6.8.
So close.
Okay. Yeah.
Real quick, one more little fun trivia aside. Ned Beatty, one of his quotes about this movie is, you should never turn down a role. I went to work for one day on this movie and got an Oscar nomination. So,
wow.
his like weird, crazy capitalism speech was really, really interesting.
Yeah. It was very well done. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
okay.
Go you, Ned Beatty.
Yeah. I think he's doing okay. Yeah.
Or dead. He might be dead. So
he might be dead.
I'm not really sure. Yeah. Yeah, quite possibly.
There's really no way to tell.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right.
Yeah, so Zach, you were up against quite a...
Yeah, no, I knew that going in. I knew it was going to be tough. Mm-hmm. Yep, I get it. It's all good.
Ned Beatty is alive, by the way. So
Oh, okay. Good. Oh, thank God. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess.
all right. So next week we got Bluesy McJones. Watching him, that's with the mouth, not the nose. I will.
Oh, good. Okay.
To this. Yeah. Yeah.
You're already running so long. Uh-huh. Could you just, like, for a second?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm fine. I'm not going to fuck up this time.
It, Zach. Finish us out.
Yeah. All right. So next week, we're going to have.
I knew it. I goddamn knew it.
Oh, you dirty bird. All
right. So next week, Zach, what do we have?
Next week, we're going to have a new friend of the show, Manny. He's going to do a true American classic or British classic? Unclear. Bridget Jones's Diary.
It's explicitly a British movie, so, you know.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. I'm very excited for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that should be good. And then I guess, I did not as good.
You didn't.
Yeah, I did a D minor to the network's D. Take us out, Seth. Uh-huh. That didn't seem like a good cut. I don't know.
Okay. No. Thanks, everybody.